So if you had to sum up Zack Snyder's Justice League in one word, what would it be?
Epic.
Yeah. I used to throw around that word casually back in the day, but now after seeing that movie, I can honestly say it was epic because it was huge. Like it really was.
It was Zack Snyder's epic. And I've posted it on our Facebook group, like, check out Zack Snyder's epic. Like, it's not, and that's exactly what it is. It's 4 hours of his vision of what Justice League should have been. And, you know, what's crazy to me is how different it was versus the original film. When you started it, did you think that it was going to be anything like the original?
I thought we would see, oh, sorry, my dog just hit the microphone. I thought the plot points would be similar parts. You know, I thought we would have moments where I'd be like, oh, okay, there's that. I also, like you, didn't realize how completely different it was going to be. Like, it was to the point where now you watch it and you realize, you know, he did have a whole other movie ready to go, but the studio came in and took all that out just to have it down to 2 hours for the Joss Whedon release.
You know, what's crazy to me is I went in thinking, okay, this is going to be the original movie with deleted scenes or extra scenes, you know, kind of like Batman versus Superman, the Ultimate Edition on HBO Max, where it's, you get all the extra scenes that were cut out of the movie or the released version. And this movie starts off just completely different. Opening scene is, you know, the final moments of Doomsday and Superman killing each other off in Batman versus Superman. And you see the sound waves going off and activating the mother boxes. And it's just like that flow of answering the questions just makes it that much better.
Oh, yeah.
If you go back to the original, it cuts to Themyscira where the mother box is already activated. And you're just like, well, how did it activate? Like, why and how? You know what I mean? So, you know, right off the bat, this answers that question. And it answered a lot of questions to me. It's crazy how it sets up for the other movies, how it makes the character development of each hero that much more personal.
Mm-hmm. I'll say that looking at the pacing of the first one, you know, Joss Whedon's, you could see how it was like, get the story going, make it make sense in 2 hours, go. And so it was like, boom, boom, boom. Steppenwolf gets the three boxes like immediately in the first cut of the Justice League movie. And it was like, oh my gosh, okay, this movie's going. And then in this movie, it really, really takes its time and really shows you what's at stake. And how, you know, difficult, especially when he's over there fighting, you know, Wonder Woman's mother, you know, the Amazons, and like that part was awesome.
Yeah.
And it was, and you really get to, I don't know, it made it so much more, like there was so much more at stake with that, with this version.
So I kind of mentioned our last episode where there's a YouTube video and I'm trying to find the name of it. Once I do, I'll post it to the Facebook group because it's a great YouTube video. And the guy compares Joss Whedon's Justice League to Avengers on why Avengers was more popular than Justice League, you know. And one, I mean, I just know more people who like Marvel than DC. I prefer both. But if you look at the movies, it comes down to one scene. There's a scene in Avengers where they're all in the laboratory and they start arguing with each other and Bruce Banner grabs the staff, right? In that scene, you see the characters that you've grown to love and admire going at each other's throats and fighting with each other and realizing that, you know, hey, the biggest thing they have to overcome is themselves. That way they can come together as a team. Now, it takes that with, you know, one of the agents dying. Everybody comes together, ends up winning in New York. Go back to Joss Whedon's Justice League. You go to the scene where they're in the hangar with the mother box talking about bringing Superman back to life. And then him and Wonder Woman get into that argument where she pushes them against the thing and they all argue about what's right, what's morally right. in that scene, there's no connection to the characters because they talk about doing something and they go straight to doing it. There's no building up to it. There's no connection to, there's no making the audience feel connected to them to where they can sense and see the struggle of coming together, and they're happy that they did come together. And that's like the key factor between those two movies. Now, circle back to Zack Snyder's epic. You see that because it spends more time on the characters. It develops them. It connects the audience to each individual character. And then when they finally come together, it's absolutely amazing. And you see that with the first battle when they meet Steppenwolf on Stryker's Island. Mm-hmm. They're trying to formulate a plan. Cyborg sees his dad get grabbed by Steppenwolf and just jumps in. And then it's all chaotic from there.
Yeah.
And they end up losing to Steppenwolf. And it's, you see that in Avengers 2 when Hawkeye raids the carrier and they all try to fight, but they're all trying to fix the plan at the same time. There's no really plan or coordination. Mm-hmm. And then they come together in New York. So there's parallels between the two, but Zack Snyder's cut really connects the characters to the audience and it really brings that character development to the movie that the first movie was lacking.
I agree with that. It only because with Zack Snyder's cut of the movie meeting, it's a 4-hour movie.
Yeah.
So he had those extra 2 hours to give us the characters and to develop them very, very well. And that was what I think Josh Whedon's version of Justice League was missing. And you look at this version of Justice League, Cyborg gets a huge chunk of this movie. I mean,
which was amazing.
Which was awesome. And you're watching and going, oh, how did they cut this out thinking it's still going to work? Like, that didn't make any sense to me. And, Barry Allen, the Flash also gets a huge chunk of the movie. And you're watching this movie and you're like, man, this could have been Avengers level good. Because that first Avengers, when it came out, it was huge. It was a big success and everybody was going crazy over it. And then when Batman vs. Superman came out, people were like, yeah, okay. And then when Justice League came out, people were like, yeah, DC doesn't know what they're doing. But with this cut of Justice League, it felt like DC didn't know what they were doing. Zack Snyder knew what he was doing. It's just, why bring Joss Whedon in to cut it down to 2 hours and completely, lose everything that Zack Snyder had already put together? It was such a shocker.
So I think it goes back to what you were saying. I think it goes back to Warner Brothers putting pressure on DC to catch up to Marvel. Because Marvel released the Avengers and it was a huge success. So they wanted to ride that superhero train and bring, Batman money back to DC. And when we talk about Batman money, we're talking about the original, 1980, 1990 Batman movies that were kind of cheesy and corny, but successes in their own right.
Yeah, Batman 1989 was a very, very successful movie back in the day.
So, but I see what Zack Snyder was trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
You release Man of Steel, and you go into Batman versus Superman. And did we get Wonder Woman first? I think we got Wonder Woman.
No. Batman. Yeah, it came after Batman versus Superman.
So we got Batman versus Superman. Then we got Wonder Woman. And then here comes Justice League, the big ensemble where you pull in the other characters. And I can see, just by watching the movie, I can see what he was doing because he brings in Aquaman. His cut sets up for the Aquaman movie of him going back to Atlantis and facing the king to claim his rightful place as king of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Then you bring in Cyborg, and a big chunk of the movie was set up for Cyborg because I don't think a movie has ever been talked about for Cyborg. So explaining his origin, his background, and how he came to be was absolutely phenomenal. Like I thoroughly enjoyed that whole, I think he got like at least an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, he got a huge part of that movie.
And it was I absolutely loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could bring in the Flash and you set up. And by the way, the girl that he saw and saved from the convertible, that's Iris West. And that's the girl they actually cast to play Iris West in the Flash movie coming up. And I need to pull up her name. I'll pull up her name in a second.
Okay.
Anyway, And it's kind of setting him up for his own movie, because I think we're still going to get his movie in 2022.
Hopefully.
Because that movie's been pushed back so many times.
Yeah.
But the Justice League movie was made to set up for the other movies, and then they're going to go into Justice League 2, which would probably bring in another Green Flash. We saw Martian Man at the end of this movie, so you probably would have seen him in one of those movies, if not his own movie.
Yeah.
Martian Manhunter, John Jones, which was one of my favorite characters as well. But I don't know, man. The way DC and Zack Snyder visioned out this movie, I think they had a plan, and then everything I've read up on Zack Snyder leaving Justice League, the production of Justice League, was because he had a family issue. But I think there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, I've been hearing that as well, that Warner Brothers used that as an excuse
to get rid of him.
Yeah. So this is where, like, the controversy starts, is like, what was the real reason why? You know what? One of the reasons people are looking at was because of how long this movie was going to be. And I think Warner Brothers was like, no one's going to watch a 4-hour long superhero movie. Like, no one's going to, we want it lighter. We want it Avengers style. We want kids to be happy when they watch these movies. You know what I mean?
Because this movie was dark.
Like, yeah. And that's one thing about these movies, you know, like, I can't imagine being a child at like 7 years old watching this movie. Because when I was 7, 8, I was watching Val Kilmer and George Clooney as Batman, you know?
Yeah.
So that was like, oh, this is exciting.
I was watching Arnold Schwarzenegger as freaking Mr. Freeze. Yeah. Like, you know, I get that. They wanted more Marvel-esque. And you watch Zack Snyder, there's, you know, Wonder Woman blew a man literally apart in her opening scene.
Yeah, she murders that guy.
Yeah. Like it. And then every time they kill they kill one of the henchmen, it's just blood and guts everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie was really dark. Definitely deserved its rated R rating. I felt like the curse words were kind of forced. Specifically the F bombs. You know, yeah. when Cyborg says F the world, like, I felt like that was really forced.
Even Batman says
Batman says it at the end of Joker. That was super forced. You can tell that was forced.
Yeah.
Were they really needed? Probably not. But I mean, it would have deserved an R rating
just on the violence,
just on the violence alone. Yeah,
the violence was very shocking to see, because, you know, you'd have people go up against the wall and there's blood coming out like from the walls. Like, oh my gosh,
Steppenwolf was cutting people in half. Yeah. Like, it was nuts.
So speaking of Steppenwolf, he had a huge glow up. from Joss Whedon's version to Zack Snyder's version of Steppenwolf. Like, when you see Steppenwolf in the other Justice League, he was intimidating, but there wasn't any depth to him, and he just ended up being a CG villain, you know? And it wasn't exciting. You're just like, okay, he's a CG villain. But with this movie, when he lands and he's there fighting the Amazons, and he's very intimidating, you know, because they're no joke either. The Amazons are super powerful, and you could see he's struggling, but you could also see his strength, like, very apparent during that sequence. And when he speaks, the voice was so much more menacing this time around than it was in the Justice League Joss Whedon version.
You know, it's funny. We were watching me and my wife, and she's like, there goes that Thanos talk, you know, very slow and calm and very menacing. And I was like, God. And it's one of those things, like, it's just a random comment, but you can't unhear it. And then once you hear it, you can't stop comparing the two.
Yeah, it was very... I think there is a villain cadence when you play a villain. You have to say it this way.
Thank you, Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin kind of killed it there. But the actor who they have playing Steppenwolf, I don't know if he did the full. I don't think that's him doing it. He's an older actor, a Syrian. I can never say his name. Hans, phenomenal actor. He's been in a lot of movies. I saw he was in the movie Munich. He was in the movie very briefly in Bruges. What's his name? Yeah, his name is I'm messing it up here. Sirion or Kirion Hines or Hens. I don't know. But he's been in a lot of movies, and I've enjoyed him. He was in that show Rome, which you watched and everything.
I loved Rome.
And he has a great voice this actor does. So it was really nice to hear him. And it's funny now that you mentioned the Josh Brolin thing, and I was like, why didn't they just let him do his thing? But he also has a very low voice too. So I like I said, I guess there's a, whenever you play a superhero or a villain, you're like, all right, you gotta really slow your voice down.
It's more like a psychological thing. Like if you're doing something extremely violent, but you still have that very calm voice, it's very monotone. Like it's more menacing psychologically, I think. And I found it. So Kiersey Clemons is cast to play Iris West in the Flash movie.
Gotcha.
That's who played Iris West in Zack Snyder's Justice League. That was the woman who he saved from the convertible.
And you know, I saw an article that people said that was not a necessary scene for the Flash.
It is.
I thought it was awesome.
It's an amazing movie. It's a necessary scene because, for those of you who aren't familiar with The Flash, Iris West is Barry Allen's love interest. In the comic books, in the TV series, in this movie, it's going to be his love interest. And it goes back to a childhood of friendship. Iris West's dad takes Barry in after his dad is arrested for the suspected murder of his mom. And they literally grew up together as best friends, but he's always had romantic relationships. So setting up this scene in the movie and showing that Barry knows who she is and cares for her so much that he would risk exposing himself to everybody just to save her life does two things. One, establishes that is his love interest, but also establishes that the Flash and Barry Allen is the most Marvel character DC has. Because Barry Allen has always been the optimist. He's always been the one who does right. Like if you take Spider-Man and Captain America and do like a crossing between the two, you will get the Flash.
Yeah.
Because he's a dorky, geeky kid who's clumsy, but he has a sense of nobility. He has a sense of righteousness, and he always does what's right, no matter what the cost is. And so he's the most Marvel character that DC has, and having that scene shows it.
Oh yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and visually it was great.
Yeah, visually it was fantastic.
Yeah, I was really on board at the beginning of this movie.
That scene where like everything slows down, and then he literally just busts out of his shoes.
That was so cool.
I was just like, wow.
I was like, really? Like this, you cut this out of the movie? And there's another, we'll get to it later, but there's another Flash sequence that I was like, really? Like that was not deemed worthy for this movie, you know? But anyway, so yeah, the Flash gets a lot more depth in this movie. And of course, like we said, Ray Fisher's Cyborg gets almost a whole chapter of this movie. I mean, it's chapters, but like he gets a whole act, it felt like, in this movie.
I absolutely loved it. When I saw part two start and it said, beloved mother, beloved son, I thought it was going to be about Superman. I had no idea that it was going to be about Cyborg. And I was like, okay, they're going to start cutting to bringing, it's going to end. And I jumped ahead to the ending of part two, like it's going to end with Superman coming back to life. Completely wrong.
Yeah.
It was all about Cyborg and his relationship with his parents and how torn it was, at least on his father's side. And I tell you what, man, Cyborg is a badass. I'm so glad they gave him more of the story because it built up his character. And his character in the comics is so, so great. And I was upset with the first movie because it didn't really establish Cyborg as who he was, and this one does.
Yeah, because when you see him in the other Justice League, you know, and I'm a movie DC fan. I don't read the comics, so maybe I'm not a real DC fan. So I had no idea who Cyborg was when this movie started. I had seen him in the cartoon, the Teen Titans, you know, and I was like, oh, that's that one guy, you know, he gets a whole movie, that's cool, or he's got to be in a live action movie, that's awesome. So it was nice for somebody like me who's not a big DC fan to see this origin story played out very beautifully in this movie. and then to see the climax of the movie to where you really feel for him in this movie. Like, it's not just like, oh, there he is. Because that's how I felt about him in the first Justice League movie, where I was like, oh, that's okay, he's there. That's cool. He's part of the Justice League. Whereas in this movie, they really, really delved into what he was about, what his motivations were, and why he was the way he was, why he didn't want to join, and also how powerful he really was. And it was really cool to see that story played out. And that chapter was heartbreaking to watch. And
absolutely heartbreaking.
And I was like, man, this is good. Like, I caught myself so many times saying, this is good. Like, this is a really good movie. And they gave J.K. Simmons, Jim Gordon, they gave him a little bit more to do in this movie.
I love J.K. Simmons, man. J.K.
Simmons is the best,
man. I freaking love that guy.
I was glad that he got a few more lines in this movie. Because if you remember in the other Justice League, he's just there on the roof and they have that scene. And fun fact, and I posted on our Instagram page, but of course it's obvious, but Zack Snyder did not use a single frame of what Josh Whedon filmed.
Nope.
So we lose 100% the mustache removal of Henry Cavill as Superman. Because that was the big thing, was when Josh Whedon had to go back and reshoot those sequences, Henry Cavill was already on Mission Impossible. What was it called? Not Rogue Nation, not Ghost Protocol. Fallout.
Yeah.
And Henry Cavill is the villain, which, by the way, he was amazing in that movie. He was already awesome. Anyway, so that mustache could not be shaved off. So they had to digitally remove it. And of course we all saw it. And it was the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, his lip is all like, his mouth was hardly moving, and it was just a nightmare. So we lose all that, thank God. And that was nice to see. And you're watching this movie and you see like the sequence when they do bring back Kal-El. And you realize that Josh Whedon was probably watching it going like, well, this is pretty awesome. I'm not going to cut any of this stuff. I'm not going to lose. The ending is different, obviously. You'll see it when you watch the movie. Whereas in this movie, he's about to kill Batman. And then Lois Lane, who happened to be nearby, comes and saves the day. Whereas in Josh Whedon's, Alfred's the one who brings her, because Bruce already had in mind that this was going to happen. Which was kind of like, how did you know this was going to happen? It didn't make any sense that he knew Superman was not going to be 100%. Whereas in this one, they have no idea what's going to happen when they bring him back, which I liked that. I liked that they weren't like, he's probably going to be evil, so let's be prepared.
Yeah, and he's not going to know who he was, and there's no way they could have known that.
There's no way they could have known, which is why in the Justice League, you're like, oh, how did Batman? I mean, Batman's one of the smartest people in the world, but there's no way he knew that. That was going to happen. But so one of the things about the Josh Whedon version of Justice League in this version was that Danny Elfman did the music for Josh Whedon's. And Danny Elfman is no joke. He's been around for years. He does all of Tim Burton's movies. I think he even does the main theme for Spider-Man, the 2002 Spider-Man, and all the other Spider-Man movies. What else is he? It's Danny Elfman. He's the best. So he does the music for this, for Josh Whedon's Justice League. And he was like, they asked him questions like, what's the music going to sound like? He said, well, you're going to hear bits and pieces of John Williams' Superman score, which was shocking, because when I heard that, I realized that they were really trying to make this more lighthearted and like, oh, this is cool. And then they asked him, like, what about Batman's theme for the movie? Are you going to hear Hans Zimmer's Batman theme? And Danny Elfman very, I'm not going to say, like, snarky or, I don't know. He was just like, well, there's only one Batman theme. It's Batman's theme from 1989. That's it. Which he wrote, you know, he wrote that theme. And so it was really funny to watch that interview. And they're like, what about, are you going to have Hans Zimmer? He goes, no, Batman only has one theme. You're like, oh my God. And so when you watch Josh Whedon's, you hear that bum, 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 because that's Batman's theme. And so when I'm watching this one, I'm thinking, is he going to, and yeah, he completely did away with Danny Elfman's score and brought in, I forget what the guy's name is, but it wasn't Hans Zimmer, which was really shocking. I think Hans Zimmer's way too busy right now to do that one. And so the scene whenever, you know, Flash is coming around them to push Superman as he's like choking. He's choking Diana. He's about to punch Aquaman, and he's over there. I don't know what he's doing to Cyborg.
Cyborg's trying to hold his arms,
and so that he could. It's like it's one of my favorite scenes. It was in my favorite scene in the first cut. It's still my favorite scene
when he looks at him.
Where, yeah, you just see his eye look behind him, and you're like, oh shit!
Like yeah, that's my favorite scene is the reaction of Flash. Like he, cause you see him just his eye turns, and then you see the Flash just go.
Yeah, you see his eyes get wide like, oh, no. And I love that so much. And in that scene, though, you can hear the bum, 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 bum. And it was like, what the hell? Why is that song? But I will say this, though. Me being nostalgic, in the Joss Whedon cut, even though the line was cheesy as hell when Superman shows up to defeat Steppenwolf, he says, I believe in truth, but I'm also a big fan of justice. That was kind of a cheesy line, but Danny Elfman did put the bum, 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 the Superman. I was like, oh, that was cool. You know, I'm a big,
I thought Superman's appearance in the final battle was a lot more epic this time.
Oh, dude.
You know, when Steppenwolf takes that axe and swings it down and you see Superman just land and hits his shoulder. He's like, not impressed.
That he freezes it and he breaks it. I was like, oh, and then you immediately see it's like the fight's over. Like,
yeah.
Superman's got to just clean house, and it was so epic. Like, and it made me appreciate Henry Cavill as Superman more. Like, I don't know, like when I first saw Man of Steel, like we talked about on Friday, I was just like, eh, he's not Superman. This movie made me go, oh, this is Superman. This guy is a worthy Superman, because Christopher Reeves was for years.
Yeah, Superman. Well, Christopher Reeves is always going to be Superman. I mean, that he's always going to be the Superman that everybody wants.
And just saying, I'm not taking anything away from Brandon Routh. I thought Brandon Routh was awesome, but Christopher Reeves
is the Superman.
It's just like Michael Keaton for me is Batman. Everyone else is good. George Clooney. But everyone else is good.
Val Kilmer.
But Michael Keaton is Batman. So the same thing with Christopher Reeves. But yeah, anyways, yeah.
Yeah, Christopher Reeves has always been Superman for me. And he always will be. There is no other Superman. I liked Henry Cavill as Superman. I think he's an awesome choice. I like him a lot more. And then when he went on to make the Witcher on Netflix, I thought that was a step down.
Yeah. That was more for him though, right?
Yeah.
That was like his,
I grew up a fan of the, he's a fan of the books and he's a fan of the Witcher story. Yeah. So he wanted to do it.
That's equivalent to Vin Diesel doing those like nerdy fantasy movie.
Like the last witch hunter or something.
That's like he's like, this is my stuff, all right?
So yeah,
nobody talk trash about me.
So I really enjoyed, I loved how they spent time on Lois Lane in this movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because you go back to Batman's premonition, whether it be in the original Justice League movie or even in this one, where they really kind of tease it a little bit, then get more into it at the end. And when they tease it is when Cyborg actually sees it when they right before they bring Superman back to life in this cut. And at the end of the day, if you go back to Batman versus Superman, when the Flash comes back and talks to Bruce Wayne and says Lois is the key, I feel like in this, Zack Snyder really set that up with as much time as he spent with Lois Lane.
Oh, yeah.
Because Amy Adams got a lot more in this movie than she did in the original. And I loved it because it showed how important she is to the whole story. And I had to explain that to my wife towards the end, just because, you know, she was asking questions about Superman going bad. And I'm just like, Lois Lane is the key.
Yeah.
You know, everything is the key. And I think... And here's my prediction. If the Flash does well in 2022, they are really going to consider a part two to Justice League. And I think that they might explore the nightmarish premonition that Cyborg and Batman have, or you see and hear in the Snyder Cut.
I don't know. I've been hearing so many rumors right now that Zack Snyder is saying, like, I'm not going to do another one. Warner Brothers is like, we don't want to do another one.
Zack Snyder also didn't want to release a Snyder cut.
Exactly. You know, so I think by like next month, we may have like a definite, like, okay, this is what we're doing.
Well, we know that the Flash movie is called Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And Flashpoint is basically when Barry Allen goes back in time to change something, end up changing almost everything in the future. So we know that something's going to happen. We just don't know what. And then even, you know, the Joker in this movie even kind of hints at it. Like, you know, how many timelines have been altered where you have failed to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, that's right. That's right. He did. They already kind of, they're already throwing that.
They're already kind of hinting towards it. And yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. If the Flash movie is a success, which it will be, hopefully me, because I love Ezra Miller as a Flash. I thought he was fantastic.
Oh, and, Ezra Miller's the best.
You know, and he's also my choice to play Ezra in Lucasfilm, but that's just me.
Oh, for a, oh, wow. Yeah, that would be exciting though. I didn't think about that.
Anyway, separate topic, separate podcast. Check us out later.
Yeah, yeah, check out the stars of it. Anyways,
so going back to the Flashpoint, and I think it, the Joker hits at it towards the end, you know, talking about alternating different timelines, which also hints towards the multiverse as well. So I think with this, if the Flash is a success in 2022, I think we might see a Justice League Part 2. And hopefully, like I told you, I think it's going to be one of those things that Zack Snyder is going to be like, okay, I'll do it, but I'm going to produce it my way. And he'll bring in a director that he trusts. Hopefully, he brings back Christopher Nolan.
For his Justice League. Yeah, I mean, it might be good. I mean, so I just looked up who the director of The Flash is, and it's Andy Muschietti, or I cannot say his last name. But he directed It Chapter 1, It Chapter 2. Chapter 1, of course, is better than Chapter 2. But anyway, so he's going to be directing this movie, and I hope Warner Brothers just lets him kind of have his thing, fun with it. You know,
like, I'm hoping they've learned their lesson. Like,
yeah, exactly. I'm hoping they've realized, like, hey, these directors we bring in know what they're doing. They have a vision. Let's see them do this vision. Let's not just keep interfering and keep messing with them. You know what I mean? And that's what happened. Well,
I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about the bottom line.
Yeah. Now there's a new hashtag going around. People are going to start to release the Ayer cut of Suicide Squad.
Oh,
so apparently David Ayer has said there's an also his version of Suicide Squad that Warner Brothers didn't want to release. I don't know.
Yeah, and then Warner Bros. Also addressed it as well. And I think one of the execs said, you know, that's crap. Like, there's not an Ayer cut. We're not going to release it. But they also said the same thing about the Snyder cut.
Yeah, so we don't – people are lying right now.
But it's back and forth. And, you know, as many people talk that, you know, Star Wars has the most toxic fan base, I think we've seen a lot of toxicity coming out of DC fan base.
Yeah, a lot.
And it's not anything geared towards the content that's been released. It's geared towards the studio,
mm-hmm.
who keeps interfering and not letting the story be told the way it should be. And, you know, we understand it's all about the bottom line. Studios have to make money. They have to do it at a reasonable cost in order to do so. But at the same time, you see what Disney and Marvel are doing, releasing their movies and getting the content out for the fans and putting the fans first. So why not do the same? But I want to talk about something else.
All right, what you got?
Let's talk about that epic battle with Doomsday at the very beginning.
Dude, that was huge.
Like, I remember watching that original scene in Joss Whedon's cut and Steppenwolf being the main bad guy and him. I remember seeing him getting pulled away by the parademons. Like, I was like, man, that's really cool. And then going into this, I'm like, how are they going to top that scene?
Mm-hmm.
They blew that scene away.
Yeah,
holy crap.
They
man.
Gave us a full battle. Like a full, that was when I realized that this movie was, you know, epic, when I saw that sequence, because I was like, wow.
Yeah. To see Ares kind of just chop Doom, chop Darkseid right in the shoulder, and you just see blood squirting everywhere. You're just like, holy crap.
And I like that it was David, I can never say his last name, but, you know, the same actor who played him in Wonder Woman. Digitally de-aged, obviously, but you could tell it's him at that part, and it was really cool to see him, like, there was a time, and you know, she says, where we all were together, where we all fought on the same team. Mm-hmm. And it was really, and you saw a green lantern there.
I saw two green lanterns.
That's right. That's right. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Like, how it was a great epic battle that I was not expecting them to do as good.
And it kind of sets the stage. Like, we all knew Darkseid was going to be the main villain in this. We knew Steppenwolf was going to be kind of downgraded to the henchman, and then Darkseid was going to be teased. And I think in the original movie, Warner Brothers and DC kind of wanted to set up more of a Thanos feel, because, you know, in Avengers we got Loki first. You know,
and then in the post credits you just get half of Thanos's face.
Yeah, you get half of Thanos's face, and then a couple of movies later you start seeing Thanos come out to fruition in Infinity War. But with this movie, it was always about Darkseid.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder always wanted to bring Darkseid into play. And, you know, again, in the comics and any other DC cartoon TV series, Darkseid is the main bad guy in DC.
Mm-hmm.
And to see him, especially in the original cut with Bruce Wayne's premonition, you see Darkseid's symbol engraved on the ground.
Yeah.
But you never see Darkseid.
Yeah.
We knew we were going to see him. And when we saw him, holy crap, man. That was everything I wanted to see from Darkseid. Like, everything I wanted to see.
It was same. I was like, how are they going to make us feel like this is the bad baddie? Like, this is the ultimate bad guy. And he did it within a couple of seconds. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is what this movie needed now. And it made me, and Steppenwolf's motivations in this movie were way better than Josh Whedon's Justice League.
I kind of wish they would have dived a little bit deeper into it, because I know Steppenwolf did something to get banished, and he was trying to get back in the good graces of Darkseid.
Yeah,
they really didn't
talk about that. Yeah, you're right. They didn't. They were just like, yeah.
Well, they did. I think they mentioned him betraying his family or betraying his kind, and then being turned away by Darkseid. Which is where I wish they would have kind of gone a little deeper, but they didn't really have to.
Because
it was a, for Steppenwolf, it was a redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
It was a more of a, hey, I found this planet. This is where your formula is at, you know, to control all living things. This is the planet where they defeated you that you've been trying to find. And I thought that part was cool. Like, they've destroyed hundreds of thousands of worlds, and he forgot the one that he lost in.
Like, yeah, that was what was really funny. He was like, I found it. It's here. And I'm like, well, you didn't think to look there, like where the last battle was?
You don't remember losing?
Like, yeah. Like,
I'm pretty sure you do.
That part kind of made me scratch my head when he was like, it's here. I found it. And I'm like, shouldn't you have already known that that's where? Anyways,
yeah.
We will talk. Zack Snyder, you still did a good job. But anyways, so whenever they, you know, the finale of the movie happens, of this movie, the Flash, well, first off, they lose. They don't win, like, for like 5 seconds, but still, it gets to the point where you see a Cyborg going like, it's too late. And then Steppenwolf's like, he's here. And then, like, it just, the explosion, and you realize that it's over.
Yeah.
But the Flash has the one that, I'm not going to call it trick, but that one secret.
The ability
that he's like, the whole movie, he's like, I don't want to do it. It's bad. Like, it's something I don't want to break this rule. And then he does it, and he churns back time.
Yeah.
And that was,
I think that was the first time he mentioned it.
He teased about it earlier.
Yeah.
There's something I don't want to do.
Well,
like, when they need him to get the momentum to come in, like, there's a certain speed he had. He says, there's something, a certain speed I have, but there's a rule I can't break.
Yeah.
And it's, so he knew he could do this.
He knew he can do it. Cause I heard him say right before he did, he's like, I have to break that rule. And then he goes and does it. I know he had talked about it when he first met Bruce Wayne, saying, you know, I call it what does he call it? he had teased it a little bit when you first met Bruce Wayne. He mentioned talking about how it can kind of control the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear him say, you know, I don't want to break this rule. Like, I heard that and I was like, oh, he's going to do it. He's going to do it.
And then he starts to run and he says, Dad, you know, he's talking to his dad, you know, like, just know that I was one of the best. And I was like, this is freaking beautiful, man. And the music is building up and you just see him running and everything behind him is falling into place.
Speed Force. That's what it is. Speed Force. Sorry.
Speed. No, yeah. You just see Rudy's face right now. Just like, oh my God, I got it. And he did not look that up on his phone, by the way. He had that ready to go. But yeah, so he starts to run and everything starts to fall into place behind him. And then you get some crazy, scary animation of Superman's face, like, gone and like slowly coming back
together. And I was like, oh. you get the same thing with Cyborg too. And it's, I think it's amazing. Like I love that scene.
Yeah,
I loved it.
And you realize that whenever that explosion happened, they were all dead. Like they all died within seconds of that explosion. And he comes back and he's able to, you know, touch Cyborg, which gives him that extra charge, if you may, which makes him, and then he's like, Clark, help. And then Clark gets there and they separate the mother boxes. And it was like, this is so cool. And then the best part though was whenever Aquaman pushes Steppenwolf, he throws him, and then as he's flying through the air, Diana with her sword jumps up and chops off his head right before the portal closes and the head and the body land
at Darkseid's feet.
And then he just looks at them and they look at him and it's like, your move, like, look what we just did. And I was like, that was awesome.
Darkseid had the best line of that entire sequence.
What did he say?
He's like, I guess we had to settle this in the old ways. And then just walks off and you see his army gathered next to him. I'm just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And that was the moment where I was like, I could watch another 4 hours of this movie.
Moment I'm like, they need a part two.
Yeah. They set it up beautifully for a part two. And then we get the longest epilogue. Somebody posted, they're like, I think Zack Snyder's trying to beat Peter Jackson's record for longest epilogue. And it made me laugh so hard. But the epilogue was pretty long. And you get that dream sequence. And that dream sequence introduced Jared Leto's Joker.
Which, by the way, I liked his Joker in this movie more than I liked him in Suicide Squad. I just swear he was kind of a joke in Suicide Squad.
Well, in this movie, I think they knew. Like, I think Zack Snyder was like, no, this is how I want it. And rumor has, it's not a rumor, but it's, that was one of the new shots they did for this version of the movie. But what's funny was they couldn't get Ben Affleck and Jared Leto together, so their shots are actually apart from it. So you'll see the back of Batman, and that's it. But it's not Ben Affleck because they couldn't get them together.
And I think at this time, you can tell, like, Jared Leto was probably either done with filming or in the middle of doing The Little Things with Denzel Washington.
His hair was longer.
You can tell that he's a lot skinnier. He has that kind of, like, belly that they're trying to cover up.
I'm almost certain you're right. I think he was in the middle of that. And they probably said, okay, give him a break and let him come over. It probably took him like a day to do that. But
yeah.
I enjoyed this Joker a lot. And okay, mind you, I've never seen Suicide Squad. I'd never want to watch Suicide Squad.
It's actually not bad. It really isn't. I actually enjoy Suicide Squad. I enjoyed Suicide Squad more than I did Josh Whedon's Justice League and more than I did Batman versus Superman. I thought it was actually a pretty good little flick.
So, I know we're all over the place. Thank you for listening, by the way. I would have rather them not called it Batman versus Superman and just called it Dawn of Justice. I think if the movie was just called Dawn of Justice, I think that would have made it so much better. Because Batman versus Superman, the whole movie, we're waiting for this fight to happen. And when the fight happens, it's not.
To be fair, Batman versus Superman was his own little arc in the comic books. Yeah. Like, it has its own set of comic books dedicated to that fight before they come together and join the fight, Justice League. So I think that's what they were going for. Yes, and we are all over the place. Thank you, by the way. But I think with this Joker, with Jared Leto playing Joker the way he did in this one, you can really tell that Zack Snyder had a lot of respect for Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight, because there's a lot of similarities between the two.
Yeah.
A lot of similarities. And I absolutely love the exchange between Joker and Batman in this one is absolutely amazing. That line he says, "Never sent a boy wonder to do a man's job." Like, I was like,
he went there. Like, he
and then Ben going, "When I strangled the life out of Harley Quinn," she told me, I was like, "God."
Well, I don't know. So that scene was kind of, I was trying to figure out, because I had to go back and watch it. It sounded like when she was somehow she was dying. I don't think it was Batman who did it. She was bleeding to death in Batman's arms. And she says, "She made me promise you that when I killed you, I did it slow." So I think Joker or somebody kills Harley, and Batman was there to help her.
And then you see Jared Leto's face freeze, and he's like, "You almost had
me." Yeah, that exchange between Batman and Joker was like, that's the Batman and Joker I've always wanted to see in a movie. Nolan had a different universe he was creating with Batman and Joker, and it was more realistic, more like this could happen. Whereas this was the comic book, you know, Mark Hamill, Joker talking to, the Batman, the guy who does the voice of Batman. I'm going to get crucified for not knowing his name. But yeah, that exchange, the animated Batman series, is like, that's what I wanted. And man, that was such a good part. Man.
And again, the F-bomb dropped by Batman at the end of that was completely unnecessary and was very, and you can tell it was very forced.
Kevin Conroy, by the way.
He found it.
I found it.
Without his phone. So the F-bomb was completely forced. It was unnecessary. You could have left that one word out and it still would have been a great scene.
Yeah. And then, of course, it all builds up to you realize that Lois died. And
now Lois is the key.
Lois is the key. And there's Superman coming back. And it ends right there when you're like, oh, my gosh.
And then another thing dawned on me. If they do make a Justice League 2, which I really hope they do, and I think they will again if the Flashpoint movie is a success, it's going to be a darker version of Endgame.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be Barry Allen and Bruce Wayne figuring out how to take everybody back in the Speed Force, how to change this one moment in time to keep Lois alive. And when Joker says, you know, "I'm here to do what you couldn't do, or what needs to be done and what you couldn't do," tells me that Joker is the one who's going to die instead of Lois Lane, which is, to me, would be epic, because
in this version, you realize Batman cannot kill Joker. I mean, Batman never could kill Joker, but in this one, it's very obvious. He's like, "I can't kill you. Like, you, I need you." And even Joker's like, "You need me. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you could say whatever." Like, it's pretty much him saying, "You could say whatever you want, anything you want, but in the end, you're going to need me." So,
and can we please get a little mini series with Ben Affleck as Batman going up against Deathstroke? That's like one of my favorite battles between superheroes, is Batman versus Deathstroke. Greatest assassin versus one of the greatest, smartest superheroes in the DC universe.
And it looked like we were going to get that until the post-credit scene. And I was like, okay, so what's the middle part? I need the middle part of this. So here's what the confusing thing is Warner Brothers is going ahead with the Batman, Robert Pattinson's Batman. I don't know anymore about it. Like, I was on board. I'm still on board. I'm going to watch it day one when that movie comes out. But it's like, how are they going to, like, why is Warner Brothers doing this when they're like, here's the Joker with Joaquin Phoenix, has nothing to do with this Joker. Here's the Batman, has nothing to do with Justice League or the Joker that you just saw. It's like, why are they making these movies? It's like if DC and Disney was like, "Oh, here's an Iron Man movie. that has nothing to do with anything else. It's just an Iron Man movie. That's what they're doing with these movies. And it's a little upsetting that they're doing that.
I'm very upset that they're doing it. Like, it makes no sense. Like, don't get me wrong. After watching the first trailer of the Batman with Robert Pattinson, like, I'm super stoked about it. Like, the fight scenes are amazing. It's a little darker emo version of Batman because, you know, it sparkles. But
oh, come on, man.
He will always be sparkles to me. He's a phenomenal actor. I'm not taking anything away from Robert Pattinson. I love him.
Pattinson. Yeah, yeah. Same guy.
Robert Pete.
Yeah.
Bob. Anyway.
Bobby. But before you go on, I love the fact that there is, like, there was the Batflick, and now there's the Pattinson. Like, there's always, like, they always had to say something with Batman in the name.
So,
anyways, it just makes me laugh.
But the rumor was with Ben Affleck's Batman that this was always a different universe, like a different universe of Batman, separate from what we saw with Christopher Nolan's Batman, separate from what is the Batman with Robert Pattinson or Pattinson. Separate from, like, this was a different one because Robin dies in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody who's a comic book freak knows that, you know, Robin goes on to be Nightwing. There's a different Batman. Like, there's different universes for it. So I think Warner Bros. Making it to kind of maybe set up that multiverse kind of a deal. If they do decide to go forward with this, with another Justice League, like, we will have to see a multiverse kind of a fight or battle.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we might see Ben Affleck as an older.
So do you think, like, you know how Doctor Strange is in the Marvel, like, starting to merge all these universes together, whereas in the new Spider-Man movie this year, we're going to get Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that with the Flash movie that they're going to start to do that to where you're going to see other Batmans? Because we already know Michael Keaton is going to be Batman in the Flash movie. There's going to be a part where Flash goes into the future and sees, or he's got to go to another reality. And he's going to notice that there was a whole other Batman alive in Gotham City.
So
is that what Warner Brothers is doing right now?
So Flashpoint, and I'm going to reference the CW Flash series, because they do, the CW does, I mean, the TV shows are corny as can be, but they do a really good job at telling the story. And in their Flashpoint, Barry Allen goes back to save his mom from the anti-Flash. And when he does that, he changes. He doesn't become the Flash. And just little things change. Like, there's a character in the Arrowverse, Diggs, who before the Flashpoint had a son or had a daughter, and then after the Flashpoint has a son. And then some of the other characters around the Flash, like one of the characters, his brother dies in a car crash. Well, before the Flashpoint, his brother was alive and well. And so, like, there's little things that change. So it could be where they're kind of setting that up, because there's also, like, you know, different worlds where, you know, there's different Flashes in each world, or different, there's a different version of Superman, like Superwoman or Supergirl's in one world, Superman's in a totally different other one. So it could set that up. But I don't think we might see a hint of it in Flashpoint.
Yeah. Cause I'm just wondering what DC is doing with all these other projects. Cause I remember Ben Affleck was supposed to have his own Batman movie. Like, he was going to write and direct that.
If it was my guess,
here we go.
DC and Warner Brothers are just doing whatever,
trying to make,
like,
money.
They're not going to put these things together. And if they do, it's not going to be their idea. It's going to be somebody else's.
That's very upsetting.
It really is, because they don't have a plan like Marvel. They just want to create content and put it out there because they want to stay relevant.
And you know what? Justice League, Zack Snyder's cut was relevant. That was great. That was greatness for
me. Now, was it great because the movie was great? Or was it great because it's what fans wanted to see?
I'm going to say both.
Okay.
I'm going to say it was great because the story allowed it itself to play out the way it should have, the way it was planned. And at the very end, you felt satisfied when it was over. And then also, yes, the fans wanted this type of version of Justice League, because only because Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman have set up this universe. No need to go through and change it up and be like, oh, here we go. This is what y'all want. It's like, no, you already gave us two movies of this universe. We want that. And I think that's what Zack Snyder's, this version of it, paid great tribute to the other two movies.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And, fun fact, this is Man of Steel trivia. So the scene in Man of Steel, whenever Superman flies into the, what do they call those things? The, when they're like, they're messing with the
world engines.
The world engines. Yes. Thank you. When he flies into the beam of it and he's looking up at it and the light shining on him, Zack Snyder very, very subtly sneaks in a frame of Christopher Reeve's face like two or three times on top of Henry Cavill's face. It's so quick, and it's almost like a, was that? No. And then you're like, mate, no. And I looked it up, and sure enough, he said that he, as a tribute to Christopher Reeves as being Superman, not the best, but Superman, they did that. And so I'll show it to you after we're done here, but it's so quick, but it's enough for you to be like, mate. Nah. Wait a second. Yeah, and so I thought that was really, really, really cool. But anyways, so overall, I know this it was just a discussion we had. We didn't really review the movie. We just kind of nerded out about it. But I think that kind of says how we felt about it. And I thought it was great. I thought it was
the pacing for me was a little slower than I wanted it to be. I mean, it picked up where it needed to be. It needed to, but there were some scenes that I felt like it didn't need, like that creepy scene at the end where Aquaman swims away and the women start singing and sniffs his sweater. Like, did we need that? Do we need them to sing that gothic opera music for us? Because I really didn't need it.
What made me laugh was at first I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. Now Batman walk away and we'll hear them. And just that's it, cut away right there. And then they keep singing. She picks up the sweater, sniffs it. I was like, what the hell is going on? I was like,
and then in the flash scene with Iris West, like he stares at her for a good 2 minutes with music playing, and you're just like, why? Why?
Because
like,
it was.
And then he grabs a hot dog, and I was like, what?
Yeah, that was. And he puts it in his pocket,
yeah,
right?
Well, for the dogs, he has it for a snack for the dogs, but.
And nah, dude, when he's running and he hits the glass to break it, I was like, oh, that's freaking awesome.
I will say this.
So freaking cool.
In the first cut and in this cut, I do not like how Ezra Miller runs in the movie, or the Flash runs, because he kind of just kind of almost like he's like swimming in the air, like swinging his arms, like he's not doing a running action. And if you go and look at the CW's Flash series, he's like, you can tell that he's like, it looks a lot better when he's running. It's totally CGI, but it's a better run style than what Ezra Miller does. Now, don't get me wrong, Ezra Miller just is Barry Allen. Like he owns that character, and he's a great Barry Allen. I love his version of Flash.
You did not like the run.
I don't like the run style. Like it's like you could have made him look like he was actually freaking running.
It was a little weird. And part of me thought, like, as he's running, he's throwing, like, somehow his arm movements helping him, like, get. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not the
biggest. He's swimming
in the. I will say this though. Talking about criticism of the movie, Jason Momoa's part was a lot less than the others. Like there was parts where I forgot he was in the movie because of how much they focus on Cyborg. And
okay, so Aquaman's kind of the token out of everybody. Don't get me wrong, Jason Momoa's Aquaman is fantastic. I'm glad they're bringing him to life, because he really is a great character to bring to life. And you can't have a Justice League without Aquaman. Mm-hmm. But like I said, this movie sets up for his movie. I thought his part in this movie was a little darker. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really get that. You don't really get those little one-liners he does in the original movie. That hooray. You don't really get that in this one.
He just says once, he just goes, all right.
Like, it's very, like, it's not forced. In the other movie, it was very forced. He's like, all right.
Yeah, it was very.
Anyway, I see your point. But I think they were also, because we know that they made an Aquaman movie afterwards.
Okay, so you're saying.
They set it up with, you know, they set his movie up. I don't like that they gave Amber Heard a lot more parts in this movie.
And they changed her accent.
They changed her accent. I don't really like that. I don't.
I think she's, I think Zack Snyder couldn't get her out of the movie. I think he had to say, okay, I got to do this.
And it's not because of it, partially because of the controversy surrounding Amber Heard and everybody, but I just, you know, I don't know, man. Equality.
Yeah, there you go. But
that's all I'm going to say.
But overall, in your list of like superhero movies, where do you rank this one? Because superhero movies are its own genre now, and this is ironic, but not ironic. But Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman, made me appreciate and respect superhero movies more because of how well that movie was and how the story that movie told. So to where now I can say superhero movies is its own genre and it has to be respected.
I will put this Snyder Cut at number 6 on my list.
All time superhero movies. So what's number one? Okay, so what's number 1 through 5 then?
number 1 through 5?
Yeah. Marvel and DC.
So it's going to be Christopher Reeve's Superman.
Okay.
It's going to be Iron Man, Tony Stark in 2008.
Yeah.
Captain America, the first Avenger.
Wow. Okay.
The Avengers movie.
The first one, 2012?
2012.
Okay.
And The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Well, actually, not in that specific order. I would put The Dark Knight in terms of quality of movie and production above all those, but those would be my top 5.
You know, I don't even consider Batman Begins, the Nolan universe superhero movies. I know they are, but I don't consider them that. Because if they are, 1, 2 are in my top 5. This movie is up in my top 5. Like this movie was what I wanted. Like, and like I said before, based off of what Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman was, this is what I wanted with a Justice League movie.
I put this above Man of Steel. Like, Man of Steel was like a very close second to this movie.
I agree.
Because I loved Man of Steel. I mean, that's, again, origin stories are my kind of thing and what I want to see. And I love the fact that Zack Snyder made Man of Steel, obviously, with the help of Christopher Nolan.
And David S. Goyer as well.
Yeah, it was just a well-made movie.
But yeah, we're fine.
Okay.
But, I agree. And, you know, I really enjoyed this movie. And okay, out of 5, what do you get it?
4.
4? 4, okay. Yeah. I give it a 4.3.
Yeah.
Because the pacing was a little... But overall, I really enjoyed this movie.
Pacing was all over the place. The curse words, some of the curse words are a little forced. Like that part when he says, "Oh shit," like that one wasn't forced. That was a natural.
And that's what you're also thinking too.
You know? Yeah. And you're also thinking that when he says it. But then, you know, the F bombs, those were very forced.
Oh yeah.
There was a, what was it? The battle at Stryker Island, whenever Batman is yelling at them to do stuff, and you're just like, that seems really forced. Like, it's not natural. Go help people, go save people. And it's like, talk normal. Like you're forcing this. And it's like, I think the sequence in the original cut was a lot smoother than what this sequence was. Now, the fight was a lot better, but the lines that were delivered in this one and that one are different. But this one was more forced than that one was.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I gave it a 4.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And yeah, I thought it was great. And let us know what you thought. Again, I don't know if this was a review. This was just us talking about the movie. Forgive us, please. And thank you for listening, by the way. and be sure to check us out on Facebook, Instagram.
And the Insta.
Next week we'll be back with another topic. I think next week we're just going to talk about something. I think next week we'll start our Oscar
So just a little preview into, I think, what I want to talk about Friday. We've both watched Promising Young Woman. We've both watched Sound of Metal. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to go into those movies a little bit for our Friday, our weekly episodes, to kind of get our reactions to them, because they're phenomenal movies. And it kind of makes me a little bit more excited about Oscar season. And I know the last couple episodes we've talked about, you know, kind of like, oh, we hadn't seen any of these movies. But now that we've seen a couple of them.
Yeah. So, you know. So before we go, so I've seen Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Mank, Trial of Chicago 7, Sound of Metal.
Yeah, I've seen Mank, Trial of Chicago 7, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal.
Wait, you've seen the same ones I have?
I haven't seen Nomadland.
Oh, you haven't seen Nomadland yet?
I haven't seen Nomadland yet.
All right.
That's the only one I'm missing. Obviously, no one's seen The Father.
Oh, and Judas the Black Messiah.
Seen Judas and the Black Messiah, too.
Okay, so yeah, we're doing pretty good. So yeah, next week, this Friday, we'll start to get into the Oscar debates and figure out who's gonna win and what we thought about the movies. But yes, thank you so much for listening. And we're sorry we were a day late, but we're here. Rudy, this was fun. It was awesome.
James, this was awesome, man. And thanks.
Y'all have a wonderful day.